Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of TechNet Radio. We're in episode number 18, Build Your Hybrid Cloud with Hyper-V System Center and Microsoft Azure. And I have back with me again my good friend Andy Serwich. Hey Andy, how's it going today?
Good, good. How you doing, Keith?
Great, great. Well, Andy, we've been going through hybrid cloud for several episodes now, talking about all different ways that we can leverage Azure and Azure Pack to provide a hybrid connectivity between our on-premises private clouds and our public clouds out on the Microsoft Azure platform. And I think, over the last few episodes, we've been talking a lot about automation, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and so let's see, we've done automation with Azure Automation, with PowerShell DSC, of different types of Windows workloads. Well, Andy, what do you think? What do you think we should do next? Should we continue down? Is there a topic that we've missed in automation, or should we continue down the next area?
Well, there's a lot of stuff in that automation topic there, right? Yeah. And one thing that I found really interesting in the news lately is, you know, Microsoft loves Linux, right?
Yeah.
And I find with my customer base, a lot of the times, a good portion of them do have Linux workloads. So I think it'd be interesting to see how the whole automation discussion works when we're talking about guest virtual machines running Linux.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. And just like in the Windows world, there's lots of different ways of approaching automation in when we're talking about Linux workloads as well, right? We've got you know, some of the technologies that we've already talked about in terms of PowerShell and Azure Automation and PowerShell DSC could be relevant, right? Because we've got PowerShell support for Linux, and we've got PowerShell DSC support for pushing desired state configurations out to Linux VMs as well. And I find those technologies, I don't know about you, but I find that to be really relevant when you're talking with IT pros that are in kind of a mixed environment where they've got some Windows and some Linux, and they're looking for a consistent way of being able to automate application workloads across the board, across Windows and Linux. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one thing that I really like about DSC in particular is the fact that it doesn't have to be just a Windows box. You know, it can apply to all these different things, Linux included. When I was at TechEd this last May, I actually watched a demo where Jeffrey Snover actually showed DSC getting applied to an Apache server, if I remember correctly. And that was just really kind of a cool thing, because before that, you always kind of, you kind of always pegged DSC as being a Windows-only thing. And I think it's really important, and it's kind of a big deal that you can also apply to other workloads other than just Windows OSs.
Yeah, yeah, and DSC, part of that is that DSC is built on standards, right? It's built on top of the MOF standards, so it's easy to extend to these other platforms as well. So certainly PowerShell and PowerShell DSC and Azure Automation are one set of tools that we could approach Linux automation in the hybrid cloud, and we'll provide some great links to some resources to help everyone get started if they're interested in exploring that area more down on the bottom of the page today. But then there's also Linux-centric shops that might already have other automation or configuration management tools in place, right? Like perhaps Puppet or Chef or Vagrant or Docker or whatnot.
There's and a lot of them.
a lot of them, right? And so the good news is that our Azure team and our MS OpenTech team, the team that works broadly and deeply with the open source community, have worked together to support a lot of those management tools as well, right? So if you're currently using Chef or Puppet, we've got the ability to easily support that in Azure with Linux VMs. If you're using Vagrant, we've got a Vagrant provider for Azure, so you can take Vagrant boxes and be able to, with a few changes, deploy them out to Azure as well. And then I'm seeing a lot of interest as well around Docker as more and more shops start thinking about container-based virtualization, right? And so we've got the ability to leverage Azure as a Azure VMs running Linux as Docker hosts, and you can use your normal native Docker clients to then manage and deploy containers to those Docker hosts. Are you seeing a lot of interest around Docker and other kind of container-based virtualization scenarios as well, Andy?
I've seen that that discussion is very relevant, kind of when you're talking about the kind of the dev workloads, not in the sense of dev tests, but actual developers producing a product. That container-based virtualization really seems to be a hot topic of conversation with those particular customers. Those customers in general, I think, is where I see that discussion happen from time to time.
Yeah. And we're looking at that support only getting better and better as we move forward. One of the recent announcements, and pertaining to Docker in particular, was that in addition to supporting Linux Docker containers, we're now establishing a partnership with Docker to be able to supply Windows containers, Windows Docker container images as well, right? So that as organizations look at Docker as a way of moving forward of being able to do virtualization at a different level, at a container level, they can still do that mixed environment, that mixed management. And then, so we're still not done yet, though, talking about our automation options with Linux, right, in the hybrid cloud, because on top of all that stuff, we've also made it really easy to get started, even if you don't have automation tools that you're kind of bought into today. We've got an Azure cross-platform command line interface, a cross-platform CLI. It's called cross-platform because it's supported on Linux, Mac, and Windows as a standard CLI. It's built using Node.js, so it's built on top of our Azure SDK for Node.js, and it's designed so that if you're coming at automation more from, say, a shell scripting point of view, if you have lots of bash scripts or other shell scripts that you've been developing, the cross-platform CLI can be directly integrated into your existing shell scripts to provide Azure automation so that you can automate both the Azure Fabric, so you can create Azure Storage and Azure Networks and Azure VMs. And then there's also an alignment to that Azure cross-platform CLI with some of the workload provisioning technologies, being able to use Cloud Init or custom scripts or even PowerShell DSC for Linux to provision the workloads that are running inside of those Linux VMs as they're being provisioned. So it's a pretty powerful tool set that the cross-platform CLI provides that can be used to do end-to-end automation, right? Not just the Azure Fabric, but even configuration of workloads inside the Azure Fabric.
I think that's a really powerful thing because I don't know too many businesses that have a single platform. You know, I know a lot of places, they like to say, yes, I'm a single platform. We have all Microsoft or we have all Mac or one or the other, but there's always that one, you know, that one ugly duckling, right, in the environment that is something different. And just the option of being able to support those multiple platforms from a single consistent CLI, I think, is a really powerful tool.
Yeah, definitely. And the Azure CLI is really, the cross-platform CLI is really intended to be a first-class automation tool, just like PowerShell is treated with the Azure PowerShell module. So that what you'll find is that on a regular basis, as new features are released into Azure, as the Azure PowerShell module is updated to incorporate scripting and automation around those new features, the same is true for the Azure cross-platform CLI. It's updated on a regular basis as well. And so there's strong parity between PowerShell and the Azure cross-platform CLI so that you can really choose. You know, if you're primarily a Linux shop with a little bit of Windows in there, maybe you would choose the cross-platform CLI as your automation tool and language. On the flip side, if you're primarily a Windows shop with a little bit of Linux, maybe you leverage PowerShell as your starting point. So it's really up to you, and we've got strong tools coming from both directions.
So I've kind of gotten into this habit with the PowerShell piece of that. You know, basically every time I'm going to sit down and do something, you know, something fairly involved with it, I make it a point to go out and check to see if there's an update. So it sounds like with the new cross-platform, I should be doing kind of the same procedure there. Is that correct?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, it's and it's really easy to update the cross-platform CLI, being that it's built on top of Node.js. It leverages Node.js. It uses the Node package manager, the Node.js NPM, in order to install it as well as to update it. And so you can check the change logs out on the GitHub repository for the cross-platform CLI. If you see a new version that's released, you can check that against your current Azure version that you've installed for the CLI. And if you need to, you can just run a quick NPM update on it and be able to pull down the latest greatest version really quickly.
All right, good deal. Good to know.
Great. Well, what do you say, Andy? Does it make sense to move over to the lab and take a look at how we can get started with Linux automation on Azure using the cross-platform CLI?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Well, I'll meet you over in the lab.
Okay.
Well, hey, Andy, here we are over in our lab environment, and we're actually logged into one of our Linux management workstations. For this quick walkthrough in our lab, I'm going to use Ubuntu Linux, Ubuntu 14.04 LTS, but the steps that are involved in leveraging the Azure CLI are very similar for really any distro of Linux that supports Node.js and NPM once you get it installed. Some of the steps leading up to the installation of some of the components might vary a little bit by Linux distro, but once it's up and running, you can leverage it in exactly the same consistent way for managing and automating Azure Fabric and Azure resources. And so as we mentioned, the Azure CLI is a package that's installed through the Node Package Manager, through the NPM tool. So assuming that I have a Linux distro that has Node.js and NPM packages already installed, in order to install the Azure CLI, I would just run NPM and tell it to install. The package name is Azure-CLI. And then I tell it I want to install that globally with the global switch, global option. And I'm going to go ahead and press Enter. And it's going to tell me right away that, hey, it's erroring out because I'm not administrator. So just like if you were in a normal Linux environment trying to do privileged operations, first need to tell it to switch over to the root user, right, using either su or sudo. So I'm going to use sudo for that. So I'm just going to tell it to switch over and do this as a root equivalent user. So I'll begin my command instead of a sudo, and I'll go through the same steps again. So I'll say npm install Azure CLI, install it globally, and it's going to go through the process now of successfully going out to the npm repository, pulling down all of the modules that are part of the Azure CLI, getting them all installed for me. So nice thing is I don't have to worry about installing any of these components. It's all handled for me as part of the package. And in a few moments, once it's all done, I'll be returned back to my bash shell prompt. And as we were mentioning a little earlier, the Azure CLI package is updated on a regular basis. So once it's installed, if you wanted to check the version that you currently have installed, all you need to do is just run the Azure command for the CLI. So all of the Azure CLI commands all begin with Azure. And then we would give it the dash version option, and it's going to come back and tell me the version of the Azure cross-platform CLI. So I've got version 0.8.12, which is the latest version as of our recording date today, and also the version of Node that's installed. So it's 0.10.25 of Node, so that you can confirm whether or not you need to do an update. If the version that you have installed maybe was installed a few months ago, and you go out to the GitHub repository and see, hey, there's a newer version with some new features in the changelog. In order to update that version, because it's all tied into NPM as our package manager, we can just do an NPM update on it. Azure CLI, same module name. Tell it to use the global switch again. And it's going to go out and do a quick check, see that we have the latest version in this case, and not bother to do anything else. So if it was an older version, we'd see it go through a similar process to what it went through during the install just a few moments ago, and it would bring down all the latest modules. So periodically, go out and check the GitHub repository. We'll include the link to that down at the bottom of the page today, and make sure that you're running on the latest, greatest version of the CLI. Now, once we've got the Azure CLI installed, we run the Azure command. If we just run it by itself with no additional options, it'll bring up the Azure CLI, and it scrolled by pretty quickly, so I'm just going to scroll up a little bit, and we'll see that we've got the version reported here as well, along with all of the commands and options that the Azure CLI supports. So the Azure CLI kind of works from a command line syntax, somewhat in the reverse order of PowerShell, right? So those of you out there that are familiar with PowerShell, you know we have a standard verb-noun naming convention, whereas the Azure CLI puts the nouns first. So as we look at the various commands that would come after the Azure command. We've got things like account and config and network and storage and VM as the different types of nouns or resources in Azure that I can interact with through the CLI. And then after each of those commands, we have additional options that specify sort of the verb of what we want to do. So if I wanted to do an Azure VM create, for instance, I can do Azure space VM space create and then give all of my options. And in addition, you'll notice right down at the bottom of our screen, we've got the ability to specify help for any of these options. So if I wanted to do something with Azure VMs through the CLI and I wasn't sure what options were available in the syntax, I could just run Azure VM and give it the help parameter, help option. And it'll come back with the specific help syntax for all the various VM-related activities, actions that I can perform, whether it's creating VMs, whether it's looking at changing out endpoints of VMs, whether it's going through the process of creating VM images or adding disks to VMs or whatnot. We've got all of those options that are all available. We can also use the Azure CLI for doing ongoing maintenance. So if we needed to shut down or restart VMs or capture new VMs to an image so that we could roll back to that image if need be, we can do all of that through the Azure CLI. And we talked a little bit about Docker earlier in our conversation. The Azure CLI can also help us have one or more of those Azure VM images for Linux distros be leverageable as Docker hosts as well. So we can use the Azure VM Docker commands for being able to do that. So help is just an option away with the Azure CLI. It's really easy to be able to get started and explore the CLI syntax. Now, one of the first things we need to do when we're using Azure with the Azure CLI is we need to log in, right? Just like in PowerShell, we need to authenticate to our Azure subscription to prove that we're a valid user that has admin access to our Azure subscription before we can move forward with provisioning or managing any of those resources. And so in the Azure CLI world, we would start most of our scripts out with Azure Login. And when we enter Azure Login, it's going to prompt us for the login information. So our Azure Active Directory credentials for logging in to our Azure subscription. So I'll just go ahead and pop those in here for one of my admin demo accounts. And then it'll ask me for my password. So I'll key that in as well, and it'll go ahead and authenticate me. And after it authenticates, it'll come back with some basic information reporting the Azure subscriptions that it found that that user has access to. So in this case, you'll see I've got two Azure subscriptions, my lab subscription and my internal subscription. It added both of those so I can work on either of them. But if I don't specify a particular subscription, it's going to default me to the lab subscription. So it automatically set my first subscription as the default subscription. Now, if I wanted to see more detail about these subscriptions, I can specify under my Azure CLI, hey, I want to do a listing of all of those subscription accounts. I can say Azure account list and press enter. And it'll come back and show me a list of my various subscriptions along with the GUID information. It'll show me which of those subscriptions is my current subscription, my default subscription that I'm working with in the current column. And one of the cool things about the Azure CLI is that in addition to providing output in sort of this tabular format, the Azure CLI also has the ability to output any of its information in a JSON format. And that's kind of useful because if we're writing a script, the chances are that we might want to have that script do programmatic things, right? Be able to log in and check to see which subscription's the default. And if it's not the subscription our script wants to work with, change that to the default. By outputting in a JSON format, we have all of the information being output in a format that other script elements, other script commands inside of our shell script could interact with more programmatically. And we can specify any of that output just it to be in JSON format just by using the JSON option on our command line. So if I wanted to get more detail about my Azure subscription, maybe my lab subscription, and I wanted to confirm that that was the default, well, I can say Azure account show, and I want it to show my lab subscription, and then I'm going to specify that JSON option to have it output all of its information in JSON format. So it's going to bring back, here's my ID, here's my the name of my subscription, here's the user that I'm currently logged in as, here's the tenant ID, and then is default is set to true. So I can use this JSON information now to be able to do programmatic things. For instance, in the shell scripting world, I might use a tool like JSOC that can read JSON information and be able to interpret it and return values. So for instance, I could say for JSOC, I want to pipe all that JSON output that we just saw into JSOC, and I want it to tell me if this subscription is my default subscription, so I can change it if need be. So I can say return, and then on my return parameter, I can say return if the value of is default, for instance. And when I press enter now, instead of returning back all that JSON information, it's basically going to return back just the true or false value of that particular option. So now I could set this to a variable in my shell script and determine if that variable is true or false or whatnot, be able to do different things. So using the JSON option with tools, additional shell tools like JSOC or JQ, it's really useful for being able to add more programmatic capabilities around your shell scripts using the Azure CLI. Does that make sense so far, Andy? Is there anything that I went over too quickly so far?
Oh, no, I think you covered it pretty well. I mean, it's stuff like this that really, really is the automation piece of your scripting, right? Yep. I mean, without this programmatic stuff like this, it'd make it almost impossible to achieve some of the level of automation that we're looking to achieve.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, let's go ahead and go a little further. So I want to create an affinity group and a storage account that's associated with that affinity group, for instance, all from within the CLI. So what I can do is first over in my shell window, I can just set a couple variable values for an affinity group name and the Azure data center region that I wish to provision within. So I'll say the East US Azure data center region, and then using those variables that I've set up, well, I can use them right with my Azure CLI. So I can say, hey, Azure account affinity group create, and then specify $ Azure region as the value for my location and $ Azure AG name as the value for my affinity group name, and be able to, you know, pretty quickly walk through the process from a scripting standpoint of setting up the resources in Azure that I need. So now I've got my new affinity group created. Now if I wanted to create storage in Azure that was aligned to that affinity group, well, I could take a similar approach. I could come over here and be able to define a new variable holding the name of my new storage account. So we'll say maybe it's Linux Storage 001, or might want to make that unique since it does need to be a global name. So I'm just going to put some my initials in front of it just to make sure that's unique when we provision it. And then to provision my new storage account, well, I can use Azure Storage Account Create, tie it to that affinity group, tie it into my, give it a label based on my storage account name, activate geo-replication. So yeah, using that as one of my options, and away we go. So I'll go ahead and press enter on that command line. It'll go through the process of creating my new storage account. So you can see that as you're looking at the syntax for the Azure CLI commands, it's pretty easy. Once you start getting familiar with that noun, verb, type syntax, it's pretty easy to go out and find the particular syntax that you need off of the Azure CLI and then begin leveraging it within your shell scripts, or be able to leverage it interactively initially, just play around with it, get a better feel for what the output is, and then incorporate that into your shell scripts. Does that make sense so far, Andy?
Yeah, I think so. I know a couple PowerShell guys that might pull their hair out over the reversal of the syntax, but you know, hey, you know, they can deal with it. I mean, this is, you know, I think if you're a big PowerShell guy, typically you're going to be working in a Windows environment, right? But whereas I see this more as the, like you said earlier, kind of the Linux administrator getting into Azure a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. So if I wanted to see more information about that new storage account that was just created, I can run an Azure storage account show, and we'll see it comes back with, here's the URI for accessing that storage, the name, the various endpoints for blob, queue, table, and file storage. And it shows me that geo-replication is enabled. And it even allows me to confirm the primary and secondary data center regions that I'm replicating across, all programmatically. So kind of nice for being able to very quickly work through that. Creating a virtual network, very similar as well. I can jump out and define, hey, what do I want to call my new virtual network? So I'll make this a unique name as well. I'll just add my initials there. And then to create my virtual network, I can just go over and specify Azure Network VNet Create. Give it a name of my affinity group and my VNet. And away it goes, creating my virtual network. So on the fly, we're using these commands to basically build out our fabric infrastructure, right? In just a few minutes, for being able to set up redundant storage, being able to set up networking and IP subnet relationships, and be able to do all of that incrementally on a very, you know, standardized, quick fashion. So it's in process of updating my my network configuration now. And so I've got, once that's done, we can actually walk through the process of spinning up a new VM on our virtual network even, and get to the point of having some new workloads that are running and completely automated from within Azure. There we go. So our new network was created. So now the next step that we want to do is, let's create a VM on this virtual network. And so in order to do that, well, we've got some variables that we want to set up the values of first, just to get those defined. So we want to have our DNS name that's going to be registered in the Azure Cloud App.net domain, the VM name of that VM, the host name of that VM internally inside the virtual network, what VM size it is, do we want it in an availability group, what username and password do we want to use, any ports that we might want to open up for maybe accessing a web application or whatnot, and so on and so forth. And then you'll also see down here that we've got this Cloud Init file. So Cloud Init is a technology that can be leveraged inside the VMs. It's a standard way in the Linux world, and to some degree in the Windows world as well, for being able to specify additional packages or additional scripts or settings that you want to push into the VM post-provisioning. And in this case, in the Azure world, the Cloud Init commands are processed by an Azure VM agent extension that runs as part of our Windows Azure agent that's inside of our Linux distro releases. So in our case, we're going to use this Cloud Init file so that when our VM is brought up, not only will it have Linux in it, but we'll tell it to automatically add the appropriate packages for Apache as well to turn it into a web server. And if we look at that that Cloud Init file, let me go ahead and just cat it out. It's a pretty short file. So if we look at Cloud Init, you'll see that basically it follows a standard Cloud Init format. So it starts off specifying on the first line that it's applying a cloud config. And then really the only thing we're specifying here, Cloud Init has a whole bunch of different options. The only thing that we're specifying here is that we want to add the Apache 2 package automatically into this new VM that we're provisioning. So it'll get pushed inside the VM as part of the Azure CLI's provisioning process, and then the agents that are running inside that VM will pick it up and process it on first boot, basically.
Now I imagine this will also pull in all the dependencies for Apache as well. Probably just calls the, you know, whatever package management application the distro is running should pull in all the dependencies for that application as well, I would imagine.
Yep. Okay. Definitely. Yeah. So you don't have to worry about any of that. So I'll just specify a password for my admin account, my Azure user account here, just so it'll provision that. And now the last piece that we need is, we need to specify, before we do the actual provisioning of our VM, what actual image we want this virtual machine to be built from. So in the Azure CLI, we've got a command called Azure VM Image List that goes out and lists out all of the standard platform images that are available for provisioning new VMs, along with any custom images that we may have uploaded. So when I run Azure VM Image List, it pulls back the name of all those images, and you'll see that's quite an extensive list of images for all of our different Linux builds and Windows builds. So for Ubuntu and CentOS and OpenSUSE and SUSE and Oracle Linux, as well as various versions of Windows as well. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the, what we need to pass is the image name, which is this long name that you see appearing for each image. We need to pass that as part of our VM creation as an option, just so that the Azure CLI knows which image to pull back. So I'm going to go ahead and specify Azure VM image. I'm going to set a variable value to one of our Ubuntu images for the 1404 LTS image. And we'll go ahead and set that. And now I've got all of my variable values all set up and ready to go. So if I wanted to actually create a new VM on this virtual network, as part of this Azure subscription, using that image with Apache all preloaded by using my cloud init file, I can specify Azure VM create and then just pass it all of those variables that I've defined the values for as options for VM name, affinity group name, virtual network name, availability set, which SSH port I wish to have open. I can pass it my custom Azure Cloud Init config file, my VM size, the DNS name, all that information I can just pass. So I'll go ahead and press enter on that command line, and what we'll see is it's going to go through the process now of looking up our image, looking up our cloud service and our virtual network. It'll create the cloud service if it hasn't been there before. Oh, and it looks like this DNS name's already taken, so it failed with an error because as it's creating a new cloud service, it found out that, hey, that DNS name's already there. So I'll just go back in my command history and change my DNS name here to make that unique. So we'll say that's, there we go. And now if I go back to Azure VM create again, it hopefully will find a unique DNS name and will succeed. So I was looking up the cloud service, didn't find it, creating it. There we go. It's retrieving the storage accounts. It's creating my VM. And in just a few moments, it'll have that VM completely created, up and running, spun up, ready to log into.
Wouldn't and again, be a good demo without one hiccup, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. It proves that it's a real demo, right?
That's right.
Well, what do you think so far, Andy? Pretty cool stuff that we can do very quickly, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, once you get all the variables defined, and, you know, you could do that in a predefined script if you wanted, right? And, I mean,
yep, definitely.
Once you do all that stuff, I mean, it's pretty darn effortless to spin up new services. You know, it's, yep. You know, something that used to take, you know, hours and hours of work, you're just doing it in a couple of minutes here. It's just, it's really cool stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And we can, now that my VM is created, so it's going through the provisioning process right now, we can even go a little further than that. Remember the JSON output that the Azure CLI does and GSAuth and how we can leverage that? So we can actually have a little while loop inside of our script that checks the status of that VM and waits for it to boot, basically, before it tries to do something that connects into the VM itself. So all we have to do is use the Azure VM show command, pass the output as JSON output, and then we're passing it over to JSAuth and returning the instance status value. And we're just setting that in a variable that our while loop is checking. So as we run that, it'll just go out and continually check to see, hey, is the VM booted yet? Before continuing on to the next stage of that script, that shell script. So you'll see right now, it's just coming up. The role state isn't running yet. It's still in the process of getting that all provisioned. And as it moves forward into the starting state, we'll see that. As it moves forward into the running state, and finally the ready role state, which is the fully booted state, we'll see that as well. Well, Andy, what do you say? Does it make sense to head back over to the office and finish out our episode today?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, I'll see you back at the office. So, Andy, we just stepped through the process of using the Azure cross-platform command line interface. Could be run on Linux or Mac or even on Windows. We were using it on Ubuntu Linux to step through the process of end-to-end automation of the Azure Cloud Fabric, of workloads that are running in the cloud. What do you think? You think this is a relevant tool that that some of your customers might be able to leverage for their Linux automation on Azure?
Oh, I think so. You know, at the very least, it's another option.
Yeah.
And when I think about cloud computing, you know, any workload, anywhere, anytime, you know, the backend administration of it kind of, I like it to follow that same mantra, you know, being able to manage it anyway, anyhow. This really kind of facilitates that, especially for the folks that are, you know, running Linux or running Mac. Not every shop is necessarily a Windows shop, so it's definitely nice to see some additional options there.
Yeah, I love it as well. It really strengthens our cross-platform support of mixed Linux and Windows workloads on the Azure cloud. And as you said, it's, you know, Azure isn't about just Windows. It's about running enterprise Linux workloads and being able to automate those as well. So I agree. Well, hey, everybody that's watching today, down at the bottom of the page that you're watching this episode on, you'll find lots of great resources that can help you move forward with automation. There's a link to Andy's blog and my blog, and also some resources around the Azure Cross-Platform CLI that we looked at today, along with some steps for helping you get started with building your own Linux admin workstation environment for doing Azure automation, for getting Node.js and NPM and the Azure CLI and JSOC, all those tools all brought together so that you can have a platform that you use for building out your shell scripts that are doing automation in the Azure cloud. So be sure to check out those resources. And I hope that we'll see you back here again for our next episode in Build Your Hybrid Cloud. Because, Andy, I don't think we're done yet, are we?
There's a lot of material, lots and lots.
And it's constantly changing every few weeks. We have new features in Azure and Azure Pack and Windows Server and Hyper-V and System Center to talk about. So join us back for our next episode, hope you will, of Build Your Hybrid Cloud on TechNet Radio. Until then, have a great rest of your day, everyone, and hope to see you in the clouds.